We're going to go ahead and get started, and hopefully this thing will activate. So the Safer model, you have basically, you can look on the slide there if you want, on here or on your paper. You have stabilization. That's the first thing we do in the Safer model. That stabilization, which you start with, hello, my name is, right? And kind of everything, calm everything down. Your words matter. Then we talk about acknowledgement, what's going on in your life, what's happening, facilitate understanding, help them understand that this is a very bad trauma, it's a bad situation, it's very difficult, and what they're experiencing is normal reactions to a very bad thing, right? The bad thing is not them, the bad thing is the thing, right? And they're not crazy, what happened is crazy, right? And it's going to affect them, right? So then you encourage effective coping, what you can do to help, how can I help, or just sitting there saying, I'm sorry, something like that. Then, of course, restoration and referral. Those are your final two things. Think about, remember that while you are going to bill yourself as a specialist, I mean, don't consider yourself a specialist until you have a little experience under your belt, right? But Tristan, here's another gentleman. We could get him I've got copies of the slides to hand out for you. So, but you want to remember that you are not the end all, and you may not be able to help in that situation. You may need more help. You may need somebody. And so do not be too proud to refer. You pay attention to what's going on. You might be able to, 90%, I would say, 80% of statistics are taken off the top of our head, right? So 90% of the time, you're going to find the largest percentage of time, you're going to find that you're going to be able to help most people. But there are extreme cases where you're not going to help. And there are times when your stories will cause more problems to the people there because transference, if you say, well, yeah, I can relate to what you're doing because I had this situation happen, transference from you to them, they're already handling too much trauma and you're just adding to their trauma and both of you are going to jump off the bridge. So be careful about that. So there are times when you're going to need to refer. And so one of the things you need to do in your preparation phase as you work in your community is learn what all the referral places are, learn the people you can trust, and develop relationships with the people in your area that are more advanced and help with mental issues, okay? Now, you're going to find in the mental health world, you're going to have conflicts. I sit on a board with, it's called the Opioid Fund Distribution. And what it is it's not opioid distribution. It's opioid fund distribution. And so it's in our county. What happens is every county across the country, and this is something I wanted to tell you guys about anyway, but every county across the country has money in a pot that they're supposed to distribute to drug addiction type programs. And the money comes from pharmaceuticals. It was a settlement with the government because pharmaceutical companies were pushing opioids, the doctors and stuff, and so there's been an overuse and over. So a bunch of their money, they have to, I mean, I'm talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars, have had to be distributed counties, county by county across America, and the county seat, the courthouse in your county, has those funds. In my county alone, they had about $300,000. And so our school applied for some of that. They gave us $25,000. I was on the board, and so I was able to pitch it, and I knew about it, but I had to abstain, obviously, from the vote. But they, you know, we're building fences at the top of the cliff. You're building, you know, and so they gave us money for scholarships for kids that are at risk to come to our school. And there's another church that started an addictions program that the board in our town gave them $25,000. I mean, that's big help for something like someone starting up a Simple Steps program or something like that. Think about starting a Simple Steps program in your church, an addictions program. You go to your county seat and say, I want, you know, $25,000. And the money, the amount of money is based upon the population. In our county, there's about 65,000 people, and we had $300,000. So it's an 18-year distribution. So if you want to find out about that, go to your county courthouse, ask the clerk's office, how do I access the opioid fund distribution? Who is responsible for that? And usually it's an eclectic board of people in that county, and every county is going to have different rules. So anyway, I was in this meeting, and one of the other board members is the director of I won't say the name, I started to say because this is recorded, of another organization, drug addiction program in our town, in our county. And of course, they had gone to all the counties around because their program affects other counties. So they had collected several hundred thousand dollars from all the different opioid fund distribution around the other counties. And you could do that if you're impacting other counties. Opioid fund distribution. And there's hundreds of thousands of dollars in every county. Probably Chicago, Cook County, probably there's millions. I don't know exactly. So, hey, Brother Neil. You want to give him the you're gonna audit this class? Thank you. So anyway, so if you go to the county courthouse, go to the clerk's office and ask about it. It's something that they do, and you might even be able to get on the board if the distribution board if there's open seats, you know. So that's something to look into as far as accessing money for a program. You just have to pitch it to them, and every county has different rules on how to get the money, okay? Well, anyway, I was sitting on this board, and this gal from this other addictions program, she and I are basically across the room from each other, and we were in a courthouse, and we're yelling across the courtroom, and she's telling me how that addictions are, she said she was against us, you know, any money going to Christian-based things because she was for all the evidence-based addictions programs. In other words, evidence-based meaning secular, completely chemical. And she said to me that all addictions are genetic. And she said alcoholism is a genetic problem. It's a chemical problem, and you can't talk them out of it. You've got to help them process it, and then you've got to give them the medication to help balance them so that they will have the proper chemical structure in their body to be able to resist. And of course, we got into a shouting match across the courtroom, and I just looked at her. I said, I agree to disagree. I believe you're absolutely wrong. Our philosophy is completely different than that. I believe addictions are no different than any other sin. It's a chain. It binds you. God talks about being bound by your own problems, you know. He says, a servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle in all men, apt to teach, with patience and meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves. If God, peradventure, will grant them repentance, the acknowledging of the truth, that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will. And an addiction is nothing more than a snare. And we have in our culture, we have determined that that addictions is a separate thing.
It's an illness.
It's an illness. And the secular world has done that. It has branded a guy that's struggling with alcohol as an illness. And so by and large, the church has not been effective in treating this problem until you realize that alcoholism and drug addiction and porn addiction and any other sin, your gossip addiction, your whatever, is nothing but a snare of the devil that's caught you, and God has answers for it. So that was a fun conversation, I'm not going to lie. But we openly discussed it, but that was fun. I don't remember why I told you that story, except that I'm an old man and I tell stories. So what I was going to tell you was the R, the second R, referral. When you're referring someone, just do your homework ahead of time before you go into this. Make sure you know, you analyze all of the programs in your area. And if you're going to send them to somebody that knows more than you do, make sure those people actually do know more than you do, and that they're not taking them down a spiral of chemical spiral. You know, learn that, okay? Yes.
We have, I forgot the name of the place, but they have a machine that is like a potato chip machine, but it dispenses like Narcan and all of that stuff to them for free.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to go. I forgot the name of the place, but
right, it's pretty common right now. But even our cops in our town give out Narcan free.
Is what they're using, because I got my ALDA. What they're using Narcan for is, you know, they're all doing the drug, and they want to get that high, like Traced in the Dragon. You heard of that? The first high, and they're giving the Narcan to their friends that pass out. It's just another tool to help them try to emulate.
It's enabling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A high, and they know they're going to come back because they got this Narcan.
Right.
I mean, I carry Narcan. I
do. Right.
But I have my ALDA. I'm trained.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Correct. Well, I'm going to tell you that that's a problem. And so my main point is referral is important. But refer them to somebody. So if you're not, the point I'm trying to make, I don't want to obscure the point in my conversation. The point I'm trying to make is make sure you do your homework ahead of time and know who is more advanced. We're in the second section. Yeah. Yeah. And who can really help, because what you're trying to do is not dump a problem. You're trying to find real solutions, right? So. The second, the Rittens model, which is rapport, incident, it's an acrostic. Rapport, build rapport. Again, it's the same thing. You'll see this, the exact same thing. And, hang on. And so then, we establish the facts. Again, that's establishing time, fact line. That's very, very critical to the debrief process. That is the meat and potatoes of the debrief process. Is establishing the facts. Don't forget that. I'm gonna underscore that. Then you. It's not appropriate for you to do that. The reason you should not write a notebook, unless you have a paper and you're drawing X's on the paper, you're not writing anything down. The difference between what we're doing is in professional counseling is we do not keep records when we're debriefing.
No, but I mean like a timeline so we can reflect back and say, okay,
You can have a manual like what I showed you yesterday that you can sit in front, open in front of you, but I highly recommend you not having a pen or paper. I highly recommend you not write anything down because they won't talk, and you've got to make sure that they understand when you're establishing rapport individually, you got to make sure that they know that this is entirely confidential and nothing will be put on their permanent record.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just to piggyback off of that, like one of the things in biblical counseling, they always told us the reason we don't want to write that down is because we don't want them to make them feel like they're being studied. Like
yeah. And that's a difference between psychiatry. Thank you for that.
It's hard. It can be hard because, like, I like writing things down, but like you listening and remember what they're telling you.
Part of the thing too. Don't forget this, and we got to move on because I got to get through. No. I appreciate both of those things. I got to move on quickly though. The part of the thing I want you to remember is this: you have the Holy Spirit Helper, so you have something that. A psychiatrist, secular psychiatrist does not have. So you ask God, you say, God, speak through me. Speak to them through me. And sometimes you'll say things and you'll sit there and like, wow, that was pretty smart. I ought to write a book. And then when you go sit down and write the book, you realize it didn't come from you. It came from God, right?
It's amazing how that happens because you'll be witnessing or you'll talk to somebody and after you leave, you're like, where did that come from?
Right, 100%. That's God.
I can't do that.
Well, James 1 says this. James 1 says, If any lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. So if you walk into this situation and you say, God, I need wisdom, and then he gives it to you, why are you trying to take credit for it? Right? 100%. Right. It's amazing.
You don't realize it when you're saying it. You realize it after you walk away and you're like, yeah, I said it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I need to write that down in the back of my Bible. I'll sign my name to it, right?
Yeah. In VA, when people come in, they have addictions because the war happened, or they got on drugs over in Vietnam or someplace, or Iraq or someplace, they got drunk, and they get out of there to deal with that memory and those horrible situations. And then they come back home, and they go to the VA, and the VA does just what you said. They give them the other stuff.
Which complicates it.
They decide to attack them.
They deal with it in a chemical way, and they give them something else. And what happens is they transfer the addictions, and these guys, these people, men and women, talk to me by the hour of how all that's happened is that I just had another addiction.
Right.
The other one.
Right.
I'm still addicted. I'm still drunk, and I can't get out of the situation, and suicide happened.
Right, right, 100%. Well, let me move along quickly here so I can get through this. Hold your thought. We'll come back to it later. But your thoughts again, don't forget, we're building rapport. We establish facts, and then we talk about what they're thinking. What were they thinking, right? What was the first thought when you saw this, when you heard that, when you heard the gunshot, when you saw the blood, when you saw the body that was ejected from the train like we had early part of this week? When you saw that body and you were picking up pieces, what came to your mind? What did you think? Okay, I'm going to tell you something really gross. So Tuesday morning, I was doing this debrief for the firemen in our town where that girl, I think I mentioned it, she sat in front of the train, and the train had hit her. And so I'm talking about thoughts, and here's two of the thoughts I got. One of them was, it was like a washing machine. The train sliced her body in half, put it between the engine and the next car, and it spun it around like a washing machine, and then ejected her like a mower. And that's their thought. It's a valid thought. And in the room, I mean, it's like, you understand, I wouldn't say this from the pulpit, right? You understand, we're in a meeting here of what we call specialized people. You guys are being trained to this. This is a trauma that happens. Okay, so another guy, he says, we're out there picking up pieces. He said, all I could think about was salsa. And he goes back and he gets some chips and salsa at the fire station. He dips the chip into the salsa, and all he can see is all the pieces he was picking up. Okay? So those are some real examples of what they're going to tell you. Now, you're like, you know, transference. You're like getting sick thinking about it, you know? But that's what we deal with. Okay? So emotional reactions. Again, the chart that I gave you, and Neil, you got one of these last year, but I'll give you another one this year. It's somewhere in here. I'll give it to you later if you want it. That chart we had of all the emotions, you have that. So there's five different emotion categories that people will experience. So you, when you're talking, just like you would in a group therapy session or group, you talk to them about, hey, these things, show them the card, say, look, you know, does any of this stuff look familiar? Well, yeah, I'm having migraines, or I'm having flashbacks, or I went home and I ripped a head off of my kid, and I, what am I doing? And I'm turning into a bad person. No, you're not. What you're doing is you're going through trauma. You're having a trauma reaction. I mentioned yesterday, pray for this thing, August 25th, we're doing this statewide. I'm doing this statewide class for all law enforcement on behind the badge, loving your first responder. And the goal is to bring in the spouses and to tell them when he comes home or she comes home and she's, understand it's not you, it's their process. They're processing some trauma. And see if we can help some marriages stay together. Because when they start, when the spouses understand, this is not about me. He's just, dad's just having a rough time. Or mom's having a rough time. You know, they're difficult. So we're working on that. We're kind of pioneering this this program. The director of Eastern Illinois Law Enforcement that I'm an instructor for, he told me, he said, I've never heard in 40 years of police work, I've never heard of anyone doing this. So I know that Fireproof, the movie Fireproof, does some of this. And I used to buy the Fireproof movie and Courageous, the what's the brothers that do that? They did Fly. Who is it?
Kendrick.
The Kendrick brothers.
Yes.
That put out Fireproof. Have you guys seen that movie? And Courageous. And we used to give a DVD to every Fireproof movie and a box of popcorn to every new recruit coming into the sheriff's department when I was a chaplain in Indiana. As a fun thing, a movie night with your brand new girlfriend or your wife. Last year, Mattoon, I bought a book that I found on Amazon written by a police officer's wife. And it was about behind the badge kind of stuff. And we gave a copy to every one of the police officers in our town. And they're like, wow, you know, that was helpful to them. Because a lot of people, the people at home are the ones that catch the fallout, okay?
What's that date?
August 25th of this year, yeah. So they'll reach out. The firemen, our local fire department, wants all of his people to come. And probably, we're going to be in the training center, and if it's too full, we're going to move it to somewhere else. Yeah, please pray. No, but that's okay if you want to come. But emotional reactions is something you're going to be talking about. And then normalize, right? Normalize. Normalize and educate. What do you do? How do you handle this? How do we process this, okay? And then support and closure is your final thing there, okay? Now, let's talk about this for a second. I got to move quickly now. We've got about a half hour left. my goodness, Tristan. You're not going to have a whole lot of time probably. So are you listening? So listening techniques. How many of you guys have ever had listening techniques? Have you been taught listening techniques? I won't spend a lot of time on this, but for you that it's a brand new concept, I want to remind you of these little tools, and you have them in your slide presentation that I gave you. And those of you that are listening later online, other folks are listening to this after the fact. Silence is a great tool in listening. One of the things we want to do is we want to fill the void. And so we'll speak when we shouldn't speak. And if you'll just wait a little bit, I know I've had conversations with, there's been times in my marriage when my wife was frustrated with me because she would say something and then I would answer her and she would say, I wasn't finished. I'm like, I'm quick to jump in and I got an answer for that, you know? And I had to learn how to stop, shut up, and let her finish, you know? And so that's important. It's an important part of listening. Nonverbal attention, we talked about that. Nonverbal, paying attention, looking in their eyes, focusing. Some of you guys are good at that. What we do in our culture is you're listening to somebody and, oh, let me check this real quick. You're not paying any attention. It would be good for you to start working on looking at someone's eyes when they're talking to you, looking at their eyes and listening to them. Right? What are you saying? What are you talking to me? I'm paying attention to you. Nothing else matters. Important listening technique. Restatement. You mentioned that yesterday, I think. Restatement is like, okay, so what you're saying is, and say it back in your own words. So you're not, see, what happens in a conversation a lot of times is they say something and you think, well, I'm going to say this. Well, I'm going to say this. And you're not paying attention to them. So what this does is you're listening to them and your goal is actually to hear what they're saying and clarifying. I'm going to tell you that not everybody likes this. I had a debate here recently. Some folks have been talking about it with Mark Warden. There's been a lot of hullabaloo about it. One of my goals in the debate was actually to hear what he had to say. I got a lot of criticism for giving him the opportunity to say what he wanted to say. And my goal was to listen. I was trying to understand him. And maybe that comes from my training. I don't know. And so I approached the debate listening. I wasn't interested in cutting his head off. I wanted to hear why do you think this? Because I was thinking he was crazy. So I thought, why do you're saying these things? Why are you saying these things? And as I listened and I restated things, well, that's why he ended up saying he would debate me because he said nobody else was listening. He was trying to say things and no one was paying attention. And when he found out that I was listening to him from the KJV side, he's like, okay, I'll debate you in an open debate. And he wouldn't do it for anybody else. I'm going to tell you something. When you listen and restate for the purpose of understanding what's being said, this is a tool, okay? Are we getting this? Paraphrasing. Paraphrasing is important. You just come through college, right? Did you graduate yet? Okay, so you understand that ChatGPT is a really cool thing, right? But they're going to catch you, right? And they call it what? Plagiarism, right? One of the things in note-taking you learn, so when I learned to speak, I was taught to collect all my information. Of course, we didn't have Google. Some of you guys remember those days. And we would go to a library, and then we would have 3x5 cards, and I would write down my everything that I was learning. I would write it down on 3x5 cards, and we call that a scattergram. And then I would construct my speech or my paper or my essay or my thesis from the 3x5 cards. Therefore, I had no danger of, you know, direct quoting, right? And if I direct quoted, it would quote. Well, nowadays, you just copy and paste, right? You can ChatGPT generate this for me. These are my thoughts. Write it for me, right? And that was not something we had. But still, even so, plagiarizing is a problem because it's not your own thought. So paraphrasing is what we've always done to try to communicate that we understand the material, saying it our own way, right? So reflection of emotion, that's another thing. If somebody's upset, you know, oh, man, oh, I hate that. I'm so sorry. You know, really feel it and reflect that emotion. That also gets them to talk more. It's amazing how that happens. And then open-ended questions. Open-ended questions. You guys have heard some of this stuff. It's like, tell me more is a simple one. But you can say something like, so have you ever been to an accident like this before? That's close. And tell me what kind of accident it was. What kind of accident? So you have the closed in, which would be yes or no, but then you follow up immediately with a explain it kind of thing. And then they'll get to, a lot of times, somebody that's closed off and won't talk to you, they want to tell you their story. Everybody wants to tell you their story. Everybody.
They just want to see if you're going to listen.
Well, everybody, they all have a story to tell, and they want you to know that they know what they're talking about, and they know what they've done, and they're seasoned or whatever. And they'll all have that feeling. And so that's what you use. Those are things you use, tools you use, listening tools, okay? Common pitfalls. One of the biggest ones I've seen is rushing the process. So you got this list, you go through fact, thought, okay, now we're moving into symptom phase, now we're moving into teaching phase. Okay, so let's get through this, and it's been an hour, we got an hour, we got to hurry through this, and then everybody's like, okay, we're done with that. Oftentimes, I found that after someone rushes the process, the real work is done after the debrief is done. And what you want to do is figure out how to make sure all that happens in the meat of the debrief. So that's why you want to take the time with the facts, take the time getting them talking about thoughts. Otherwise, you're rushing through and we're doing what we were talking about yesterday, bouncing around, and you're not really dragging them into their emotions and then back out again. Okay? So rushing the process, don't rush the process. Don't promise we're going to be out of here in 30 minutes. I know you guys are busy. Well, they're going to, yeah, I'm busy. And they're not going to cooperate. Okay. Try to keep your debriefs short, but because they do have other things to do, but don't communicate the idea of speed. Let me tell you this. Does anybody here do hospital visitations? Okay. So one of the tricks, with moving into a hospital when you go into visitation is pull a chair out and sit down. Let's say you've got only 5 minutes with them. You don't walk in and say, okay, so I got to get down to the next person. How are you? I'm on my way to the next room. I'm such a busy guy. You don't do that. You only have 5 minutes, okay? But you go in and you make that 5 minutes. Man, how you doing? And you take the full 5 minutes with full focus on them, right? And then you can get up and walk out. See, that keeps you from rushing the process on an individual thing. Make sense?
Quality time, not quantity.
There you go. That's exactly right. Minimizing emotions is another pitfall. You're trying to help them normalize, but you also have to validate that what they're feeling is very, very deep. We were talking about the lions and dolphins yesterday, and I was in the hallway. We were talking about, you got to know that we're talking lions and dolphins, things that your brain is creating. But the problem is that you can oversimplify and minimize emotions without thinking. So that's a pitfall. Be careful of that. Are you tracking me? Okay. And then solving too soon. Okay, you're good. Okay, you're normal. Back out. Back at it. Well, right, right. And the truth is, to follow up with what you're saying, the truth is that everyone heals at a different level. Everyone heals at a different speed. And there's no right or wrong way to heal. See, you've been going through that for 5 years. What's wrong with you? So Maya, what happened with me, my wife and I got married. I was older. I was 30 when I got married. And I've been doing ministry for a while. My father did the wedding. And we went on our honeymoon. I hugged him goodbye. And his birthday was the next day. I called him, said, happy birthday. And Sunday night or Monday, he went to the hospital. And we were married on Saturday. He went to the hospital. And my new father-in-law called me and said, your dad's in a coma. I think you should come home. I went home. The next Sunday, I was preaching in the church hoping dad would live. And on Tuesday, he died. On Thursday, a week and a half after I got married, I'm having a funeral, first funeral in my career, and it's my dad's. And now I'm left with the ministry he had, trying to figure out what to do. I say, I close down the funeral. My new wife and I go back to our little trailer house, and we sit down and look at each other. The phone rings, and it's the deacons. They asked if they could talk to me. So I went back over to see them, and they said, will you take the church? Night at my dad's funeral. I wasn't planning on doing any of that. We're just getting married and going to do youth stuff, you know? And suddenly I'm like, what? It took me, I never cried because I have siblings. I have six siblings. I have one brother who's now in heaven and five sisters and the church and the ministries. And we had 13 pastors come to help. And I'm managing, helping, doing all this stuff. Just got married. Now I'm doing 2 weeks later. I had to leave for training for a school because now I've got to run the school and I got to go to this training to find out, you know, what I'm even doing. And I was out for a week in this training. And during the training, I was wanting the books they gave me. I wanted to throw them across the room all through the thing. I'm like, huh, but I have to calm exterior. It was 2 years. 2 years. I'm rolling. And 2 years later, I'm sitting in my front room. My son has been born. It's Father's Day. And I started writing a poem about my dad. And I broke down for the first time in 2 years, completely had an emotional breakdown, and I could not control it. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. But it was 2 years before I even processed it. So, you know, everyone and everyone else was like, you know, and I'd go to a meeting or something and my story was always the same. We got married. This is just what I told you. I was telling that story. Finally, I got tired of telling the story. He was like, okay, I'm done with this. It's time to live. Let's stop thinking about death. It's time to live. And on we went, you know? But be careful with solving too soon, okay? Let's finish this up real quick. Can we do that? And then we'll move to the next slide. Role-playing activity instruction. We're gonna pair off together, and we're gonna choose. Here's what I wanna ask you to do. In this classroom right now, let's get some pairs here. Just grab somebody. Brother Joe can sit out if he doesn't mind. And here's what we're gonna do. Choose one of the debrief models. We're gonna run a quick 5-minute scenario, okay? Your partner just experienced a traumatic call involving a fatal car accident. They're withdrawn and quiet. Use the debrief model of your choice, either written or safer model, and go through with your partner. They're withdrawn and quiet. You're trying to get them to talk. They were just involved in a fatal car accident. They just saw, whether it was a burn victim or they saw a child in the car, they saw an empty car seat, something like that, okay? So grab a partner. Can you do that? Why don't you ladies work together? And why don't you get with Tristan? And you two gentlemen there, get together. Sound good? And here's, remember what we do. Pick one of the models. Go through it. Give me 5 minutes. I want you just to feel the system for a second, okay? That's what we're going to do. Where are we at in the process? Did you get all the way through?
Yes.
Okay. How about you guys?
Almost at the end.
Good. How far are you guys at?
I'm emotions, and now we've been to education.
Good. Where are you guys at?
Normalization.
Okay. Are you feeling it a little bit? I don't want to rush you guys. You understand? We can't rush the process, right? I don't want to rush you, but I got some more stuff I got to give you. All right? I wanted you to feel it just for a second. So we've got 1 hour for this session, and so we are clear out of time, and I have a whole nother session to give you before you can take your test. I'll tell you what, we'll be fine. Let's stay on point, but I'm just going to ask you guys to help me in the last session that you guys kind of keep your comments a little bit less, and then I can get through the material a little quicker and make sure that you have, because there's some really important things I want to give you here in the last session. And it's advanced techniques, and obviously we're going to talk about self-care as well. So, and don't be afraid of the exam. If I were you, I'd go ahead and try it. If you don't pass it, you don't pass it. But you might as well, you've taken the class, you might as well get the certification, right? But Keller over here, he's a layman as well, and layman, I was telling him yesterday, there's a big opportunity for laymen to use us. Big opportunity. We can talk more about that. But self-care is very important. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And we're going to talk about... we're going to talk about that because... And ladies, a lot of times the ladies will pay more attention to that than the guys will. Because we're like, I got this. I'm okay. I've been through a debrief. I know what to do. And the truth is, I'm going to tell you this. I was at a situation, and was having flashbacks. And look, I've been doing this for 30 plus years. I am a professional. I'm just telling you, I do this. This is what I do, right? I'm certified. I certify other people. I do this. I know what to do. My point is simply this. Even though I know what to do, have done it, teach the classes, I'm walking down the hospital hallway and I'm feeling like, you know, I got run over by a Mack truck. And one of the guys on my CISD team hollered at me, called me, and he saw the sloop of my shoulders that something was wrong. He said, are you okay? And I looked at him and I said, I don't think I am. Mm-hmm. And he said, come here. And he grabbed me and we went off into a side and he spent some time taking care, helping me. And I want to tell you something, that was invaluable. And almost every class I talk about that because it made such a difference in me because I'm the guy. You know what I mean? In our area, I'm the resource guy. When there's a shooting at the school, they call Hafley. When there's a train accident, they call me. Everybody comes and calls me for the house burning and the babies that got burnt in the house. And so I have all of that stuff. And after a while, it gets like, I can't handle this. But I'm don't have anyone to turn to unless on purpose I do.
It's like a filter for the dryer.
Yeah. You got, there's a good analogy. Yes.
We have an actual hour before lunch.
Right there.
Lunch is the break.
Is this a break time?
Yeah. We have an hour before. We have noon is our next thing to do. And it's still.
Are you guys okay with taking 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Still, we'll do 30 and then do 30.
Are you okay with that? Are you guys all right? Well, let's roll then, and maybe we can get this. I appreciate that. Okay, so session three here, class three. This is class, 3.5, huh?
Was that not class three? What we just
no, that was class two.
Oh.
We were halfway through class two yesterday. So you can put it however you want to. Okay, so this is class three. This is advanced techniques in self-care, okay? So here's the thing. We talked about this a little bit, but adapting to the individual. This is a critical thing, adapting to the person. Each person, I put a picture up here to show you the different people. So you've got a soldier, you know. I mentioned yesterday, I have a ranger that comes and sees me once a week. And he was the gunner for 6 years. And he was seeing things and was medicating with alcohol. We've got him off of alcohol completely. He's trusted Christ. I baptized him about 2 months ago. And every week he comes to see me. His issues are different than this guy's. Okay? Her issues are different than hers. Very real. Did you know that in the ER... Did you know the ER in a hospital is the most dangerous workplace in America? Did you know that? Number one. Have you ever even thought about it? The staff in the ER are exposed to more violence than most of the cops in your town. So I've been in, here's a 20-year-old girl. The nurses, you know, they can get their nurse's degree in 2 years. So a girl come out of high school, she's 18. By the time she's 20, she can get a nurse's degree in our town. Okay? So she's 20 years old. She's in the ER. Still young, still raw, not married, just barely not a teenager. Okay? So this girl's sitting in the ER. Some guy comes in. He's 6'2", built like a mountain. He's high. She's a little tiny thing. And he gets aggressive, knocks her, bounces her head off the floor, falls on top of her. The security guard was a rent-a-cop, God bless him. But he was out of shape, couldn't run fast enough, and wasn't able to pass police academy. But he's wearing a badge, bless God, and he's there to help. Have you seen Paul Blart, the mall cop? You should watch it. I'm not saying every security guard's like this, but I'm going to tell you that he had no clue what to do. She is thinking she's going to die. Noise, everything's falling, everything's everywhere. And everybody, now she's dealing with trauma. Her dad is a captain on the fire department. So I know him as well. So this gal, so you know what? I've been going and seeing her regularly. I don't see her personally, but I see her at the, you know, at the desk, and she gives me regular updates. Guy goes to jail. She tells me, we're going to court. Da-da-da-da-da. They end up throwing it out of court because of insanity or something. So she gets no closure. Think she's dealing with some stuff? Yeah. What she's dealing with is entirely different than what this guy is dealing with. So every situation has a unique situation, a unique thing. Another gal in the ER got a telephone cord wrapped around her neck. Guy tried choking her to death. That happens a lot, that kind of thing. So personal considerations, think about their what they're dealing with, what the trauma they're dealing with, the kind of thing that they're reacting to. Be culturally aware of what's going on. I deal with Muslims and Buddhists, doctors, all the time. I enjoy having theological discussions with one of my best doctor friends. He's a cardiologist. He is a Hindu. And he is a loudmouth. And he'll meet me in the hallway. And we'll talk and talk and talk. And he always wants to talk. But then I always get in a word about Jesus. And the other day he said to me, I believe in Jesus. But he also believes in everything else, you know? And so we've been working on him for a while. But be aware and be respectful. I respect him. The Bible says, I don't know if you know this verse is there, revile not the gods of the land. Did you know that? When I was a young preacher, I used to laugh about Buddha. I thought it was funny to talk about the fat guy sitting there, you know, and can't do anything, right? But it says in the law, don't revile the gods of the land. Somebody, Buddha doesn't do anything for us, and we think it's funny, but there's somebody that grew up thinking that's God. So you be careful with that kind of thing, right? Are they beeping at me saying I gotta quit? Hang on. Rank hierarchy sensitivity. So be careful with rank and hierarchy. Remember, there are some people that are used to running things. You don't know who you're talking to. Some people are very much in charge people, and there are people that you'll be talking to. You don't know what they've done. I was dealing with a guy who had PTSD, and he had, by his own admission, I found out later, he'd been in the room with some of the top brass. Tristan, you know who I'm talking about. He was helping them design tanks in the United States. And so when he talks to me, he's like, look, I had control of all these big things. You know, you got a little church. You know, and there was no respect there. And I had to be aware of that when I was talking to him. And I had to respect that. And if I didn't, I'd completely lose him.
You would feel a little bitter.
Yeah. You got to be really...
things of you as right. Down here, and you just got to realize...
Right.
In the back of your head, you're the child of the king, you know?
You got to be really careful with that, okay?
No.
So let's move on here. This is something I want to show you. Here's a book. It's written by Kent Williams. This book is, it's called Breach Point, How Cops Find and Achieve a Balanced Life and Career. I recommend you trying to look up this book if you're interested in working with police officers at all. What they've discovered with police officers is that everything that makes a good cop wrecks their marriage.
My sister's...
The best cops...
Was a homicide right. Crime detective in Chicago.
Right. My cousin committed suicide in Denver. He was a Denver detective. But what makes them a great cop wrecks their marriages. So the best cops never stay married. So here's the thing. Look at this. Collecting intelligence on street gangs, engaging in gossip about coworkers. That's how it translates. Because now you're wanting all the details about everything. That's what you're geared to do. Controlling suspects on the street. You begin to micromanage subordinates because you're a control freak. You go home, everything's got to be this way. You're in your car, you're in your squad car. Everything has to be a certain way because you need access to everything. This is locked, that's locked. You go home and it's not that way. It's going to drive you crazy. Command during a bar fight, always having to be right. So you're in command, you're in charge. Shut up, sit down. Okay. So my wife's cousin was a detective. And come home one night, his wife was mouthing off at her. He backed her into a closet at gunpoint. course, he's not a sheriff anymore, but he lost his position, lost his badge. But, I mean, he was a good cop, really good cop. But he didn't know how to have a relationship. Keeping your distance from, oh, professional teamwork. Teamwork, sometimes too much extracurricular socializing. The buddies, and then you exit the home life. You push them to the side. Keeping your distance from crowds, withdrawing from spouse and family, suspicion about who's the offender and who's the victim, questioning if the Boy Scout leader ever committed a felony, or the guy, I don't like this coach. There's something wrong with him. He's my boy's baseball coach, but he's a crook. He acts like a crook.
Right?
And that's what happens. So we're going to give you one more slide, and I think we'll take a break for now. I'm going to end this right here for now. Managing emotional reactions. Tears, anger, shutdowns, and grounding techniques. Now, when we come back, I'm going to give you four grounding techniques, okay? How to ground people. But when they begin to get angry or cry or they shut down, now we're going to talk about how do you manage that. When you guys come back this afternoon, we're going to talk about what to do when these situations happen. Okay? All right. We're going to take a break now, okay? Thank you so much.